So we're exploring the Bodhisattva ideal, and tonight we're going to be exploring the Jatakas. And the Jatakas are stories about the Buddha and his previous lives. So I'm going to do this in storytelling mode. I'm going to tell you a story. And it's a story of the Monkey King. This is one of the Buddha's previous lives when he was a monkey king. We don't call him Buddha, we call him Bodhisatta or Bodhisattva. So I'd like you to start by imagining a mango. Just picture a mango and recall the taste of a mango. Can you remember the first time you sank your teeth into a mango? And that soft flesh melted in your mouth, and the juice, the sweetness of it. Do you remember that? Mangoes are delicious. They're loved by people and they're loved by animals. Imagine what someone might feel the very first time if they tasted a mango. Imagine they lived in a country at a time where you couldn't just wander to a supermarket and get mangoes and guavas and melons and all this sort of thing. Imagine they were rare. And imagine that person tasted a mango for the first time, an extraordinary taste. What might they do for the sake of that mango? So this story is about a particular mango, or at least a particular mango tree, which grew by the banks of the mighty river Ganga in the heart of India in ancient times. Not just ancient times, but more ancient than ancient times, times before history. Times when all the only way that things were recorded was through stories. And in these ancient prehistoric times, this tree grew mighty and strong, and it bore many mangoes upon it. And these mangoes were loved by the monkeys, who swung from the branches and climbed up to the highest point of the trees. When the mangoes fell on the ground, the monkeys picked them up. When they clung to the branches above but were ripe, the monkeys climbed up and ate them. But the only mangoes the monkeys couldn't get to were the ones that dropped in the night into the river Ganga and were washed away by the current. And this mango that's at the heart of the story floated down the river Ganga, passed through the jungle, past the mountain, into the city. And there it was caught in the nets of the fishermen. They raised up their nets, and they found their catch, which was fish, of course, but this mango. And the king of the city was watching them. He knew what a fish was, but what was this round, rugby ball-shaped object of yellow, orange, and green? What was it? And he asked the fishermen, "What is this thing you've caught?" They didn't know. So he asked, he called for the foresters to be brought to him. And he asked them, "What is this thing the fishermen have caught?" And they told him, "Sire, it's a mango." "And can you eat this object?" "Sire, you may." "And does it taste good?" "Sire, you must taste this and judge for yourself." So he cut a slice of the mango, sank his teeth into it, and as the juice trickled down his throat, a thought came into his mind. "I must have more of these. I want more mangoes." So search parties were sent out across the nation. But they didn't just go any old place. They knew that the mango had floated down the river. So then they knew that there must be a mango tree somewhere upriver. And the king summoned his soldiers together, and they made an expedition, a military expedition to find the source of the mango. They went over the mountain, along the river, and eventually they saw above, on a cliff above the river bank, this mighty mango tree filled with these glistening fruit. And they watched as the monkeys gathered the fruit and climbed. They fell asleep beside the mango tree. Because there were no mangoes on the ground, they were only in the branches, and they knew they wouldn't be able to reach them. So at night, as the soldiers slept, the king was awake, and he watched as he saw the monkeys come into the tree and pluck the mangoes and eat them. And the king had a thought. He thought, I know what I must do. First, we have located the mangoes, and in the morning we will climb the tree and we will get the mangoes. But what's more, we will catch these monkeys who are mango lovers like me. We will shoot them with our arrows, and tomorrow morning we will have monkey meat and mango together, the best meal any man can possibly eat. The monkeys woke in the morning to see that the tree was surrounded by archers, and they were trapped. There was no way that they could escape. And their bodies shook with fear. Sweat beaded their heads. They did not know what to do. And they turned to their chieftain, the Monkey King, and they said, "We are afraid. Death stares at us in 1,000 arrows all around the tree. Please tell us what to do. Please save us." The Monkey King knew that it was for him to save his brothers, and that they were too scared to do what he saw might just be possible. He grabbed a creeper that hung from one of the highest branches, and he swung across the river, and he saw that the creeper was long enough to carry him across the river, and so that he could grab the far shore. So he climbed to the branch, he swung across, and it was too far. He swung back again. He thought, this is no good. I have to do something. So he realized that he had to bridge the gap between the end of the creeper and the far bank. So he swung once more. He swung across the river. He grabbed hold of the far shore with one hand, having tied the creeper to his leg. And at his fullest stretch, he could make the link between the creeper and the far shore. So now he had created a bridge. And down came the monkeys from the tree, along the creeper, boom, 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 over his back, boom, 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 onto the far shore. The next monkeys came along, boom, 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 down the creeper, boom, 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 over his back, boom, 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 onto the far shore. A whole troop of monkeys came along. And as they came, and especially when they were going along his back, boom, 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 along his back, boom, 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 on his head, boom, boom, onto the far shore, it became more and more painful, more and more of a stretch, until his strength was at its final ebb. And at that point, the bad monkey, and I'd like you all to boo at this point, the bad monkey I haven't said who it is yet. The bad monkey, hold on. The bad monkey, Devadatta, came along the branch, came along the creeper. Boom, 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 boom. Until he got to the king monkey's back. And then, boom, 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 he jumped up and down on the king monkey's back. Boom, 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 boom. On his head. Boom, 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 boom. On his hands. Boom, 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 boom. Until eventually the king monkey could no longer keep his grasp and let go. Devadatta jumped across and the king monkey fell into the river. The king, the human king, had been watching all of this and was deeply moved, deeply impressed. He realized that there was something in life that was more important than mangoes, and that was kindness and courage. So he ordered his men to fish the king monkey, out of the river, to rescue him and to take him to the shore. And he ordered his men to look after that king monkey for the rest of his life, to keep the mango tree sacred and to let it be for the monkeys to eat mangoes in peace. And that monkey was none other than
the Buddha.
Thank you very much. And that bad monkey was Devadatta, who is the cousin of the Buddha, who's the baddie in some of these legends. So that is a story of the Monkey King. And it's one of, how many is it? 540 or so Jataka tales in that are collected in particular. There's 540 in the Theravadan school that were written down in the centuries after the Buddha, or at least composed and then written down the centuries after the Buddha by in the Pali language. And they tell the story of the Buddha let me get my language right. They tell the story of the Bodhisatta, that's the Pali, or the Bodhisattva, that's the Sanskrit, as he goes through his lives, life after life after life. And in each life, he's presented with some kind of a challenge, you know, like the Monkey King challenge. And there are so many stories. Some of them come from Indian folklore, which people sort of think that they know that, because there are parallel stories that seem also to be older. Some of them seem to be taken by a little, extrapolated from a little phrase, a little anecdote that the Buddha tells in one of the suttas, you know, about a man going across the wilderness, and the caravan leader who goes across the wilderness and, you know, what the qualities that he needs to get across. That's just a couple of lines in a sutta, but it becomes a whole big elaborate jataka. So in some way or other, these stories have developed, and they have they raise a number of questions for us. Are they true? Well, that's a question we can ask if we want. We won't get much of an answer, as there is no possibility of evidence for them. In these stories, the Buddha is reborn in every walk of life you can think of, in all the different castes of Indian society. And as a whole array of animals, as a bird, as a lion, as a monkey, as we've heard, and so on, many, many different kinds of animals. And what then are we to make of them? Well, one question is, they all turn on this idea of rebirth. So what do we make of rebirth? Is it true? Is it not true? How do we know? Will I be reborn when I die? And my suggestion to you is that in contemplating the Jatakas, we just put that to one side. Actually, my suggestion is that in contemplating the teaching of rebirth and what will happen to us when we die, we also put it to one side. I know that that may not feel entirely satisfactory to you, because it's quite an important question, you know, what will happen when you die? And just putting it to one side might seem a bit glib. But having reflected on this over the years, I don't seem to have got anywhere. And I think we just take it as in a parallel with really what we're being asked to do when we encounter something like the Jataka tales. They're literature, they're folklore, and they're an invitation to enter a particular imaginative world, a particular way of thinking, a particular realm. Rebirth belongs to in that realm, is a natural thing. So do spirits. And these sorts of stories about spirits, about past lives, they abound in societies, more traditional societies than ours, where they are just a natural part of how people relate. And the Jatakas, in a way, belong to a much wider sea of stories, an ocean of stories. And the currents flow into the Jatakas from other cultures, and they flow from the Jatakas out into further cultures. So what we have is this incredible rich resource of Buddhist stories. You may have seen the film or read the book, No Country for Old Men. Who's seen that or knows that story? Yeah, some of you do. Do you remember the first scene in it? A man goes into the Texas wilderness and discovers the result of a Mexican standoff, I think you could say. Everyone is dead in a big shootout over drug money. Under a tree, he finds a big suitcase full of dollar bills. He pauses. He thinks, what shall I do? He takes the suitcase and he runs, because he knows that although all of these people are dead, someone is coming after this money. But he's going to take a risk and he's going to try and make it. And so he goes on the run, and pursuing him is the character played by Guillermo del Toro, who is implacable, a hitman, and nothing can stop him. Eventually, Guillermo del Toro will catch the guy with the money. And that's exactly what happens. Along the way, he kills many other people. And each of them says, you don't have to do this. And the Guillermo del Toro character says, that's what they all say. And then he kills them. Charming, I hear you say. In English literature, the first really great compendium of stories is Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. In the Canterbury Tales, one of my favourite of all the Canterbury Tales is the Pardoner's Tale, which is told by someone who sells absolution. He's a pardoner. You pay your money, you pardon your sins. And the Pardoner's Tale is that three young wastrels living in a country which is ravaged by death are drinking in a tavern and decide that they have a mission, which is to kill death. They go on a journey, and on the way they meet an old man, a mysterious old man. We know nothing more about this man. They ask him a question. We want to kill death. Where will we find him? He looks at them and says, you will find him under that tree. They go to the tree and they find treasure. They forget about killing death, and they decide that they must celebrate their tremendous good fortune. But in order to celebrate, they need some alcohol. So one of them is sent off to get some mead from the village. He goes off to the village, and when he's there, he has a thought. His thought is, if I poison this mead and get the other two to drink it, I can get all the money for myself. Meanwhile, the two men who are under the tree with the treasure think, when he comes back, if we kill him, we get half the money for ourselves, and that's much better than the third. So, lo and behold, he comes back, they kill him, they drink the mead to celebrate, and all three are dead. The result is that they have found death. He was under that tree. And the moral of the story is Radex Malorum Est Cupiditas, the love of money is the root of all evil, which informs us, it tells us that Guillermo del Toro in No Country for Old Men is not a hitman. He is in fact death. He is the avenging death. The main character had invoked by his desire for the money that was sitting there. And the origin of all of this, if you trace the Pardoner's Tale back through the Arabic, through the Persian, back to Jataka number 47, I think it is, you have almost exactly the same story there. From the Jatakas to Hollywood in 4 or 5 steps. But the origin of that really powerful story, that greed brings retribution on you, some kind of karmic effect, is in the Buddhist story. And it's there through all of them. It's a Buddhist insight. So the Jatakas. Jatakas are there in the whole... They've come into our culture already. But I just want to offer you another little reflection on the Jatakas, which is... I really invite you to read them, and there's a very good Penguin Classics edition, which I'm holding up now, which is very accessible and it's very well written. It's not all of them by any means, it's something like 20 or 30 of the Jatakas. Just read them, they're very readable, very accessible. What they do is they invite us into a particular way of relating to the Buddha, through stories and through contemplating his perfections. So in the Theravadan tradition, there are 10 perfections, and which I won't go through, but these are the 10 paramitas, they're virtues, and in each of these stories, the Buddha has something to learn. And as in the Monkey King story, he's confronted with a challenge. What will I do to save my troop of monkeys? And he realizes that what he has to do is to practice the paramita of, I think it must be dana, of giving his life, sacrificing himself for his the people he cares about. And there are a number of these suttas, which have the jatakas, that have this theme. The theme of self-sacrifice, of compassion. They're not all like that. There are all sorts of things that the Buddha has to learn. So I've been reflecting on the Jatakas recently. It just strikes me that it's as if this figure of the Buddha and the story of the Buddha going from birth through, you know, all the things we know, you know, he left home, he... tried this approach, he tried that approach, he sat down, he became enlightened. It's as if that story was pregnant with a myriad, a kaleidoscope of other stories that brought out and that needed to bring out the mythic qualities of them, the moral qualities, what it was that he learned. The Buddha Siddhartha, let's call him Gautama, contains a myriad of selves, a multitude of possibilities within him, compacted into this one figure. This Buddha is an animal. He is a tiger. He is a monkey. He is a Brahmin. He is a warrior. He is a king. All of these selves are caught in the folds of his robe. Although, in a sense, we're told that all of these selves existed in the past, they also exist in a timeless sphere. There's no time in the unconscious. That's what Sigmund Freud says, anyway. And there's no time in the realm of stories. And that's what stories are for. Stories are about giving us ways to imagine the Buddha. And by imagining the Buddha, to imagine the possibilities of what life can be. In some sense, you are that monkey. You are that tiger. We have that within us. And in some sense, the Jatakas are saying that life constantly presents us with challenges, and the meaning of following the path, the meaning of life, is to learn the lesson that each of these challenges poses to us. I rather like thinking of the Buddha in the Jatakas as being a bodhisattva in the mould of Doctor Who. He's constantly reborn, constantly materialising in different realms and different planets, and constantly confronted with the need to save people or help people. He has an assistant and a sonic screwdriver. The Buddha doesn't have that, but what he does have is the continuity from life to life of his bodhisattva spirit. He's heading somewhere. He's learning things. He's practicing. That, I think, is in the end the lesson of the Jatakas. I was recently reading one of Sangharakshita's, one of the recent latest papers that were composed in the latter years of Sangharakshita's life. They were written up by Subhuti and based on interviews with Sangharakshita. And clearly Sangharakshita said a lot more than Subhuti could quite capture in the the sequential account that he, and the conceptual account that he offered in those papers. So in one of the papers called Revering and Relying on the Dharma, I noticed a footnote just near the end. And the footnote says, we should read the Jatakas more. Sangharakshita saying, we must study the Jatakas. There's so much richness and so much moral food in them. And with that thought, I'll finish.